Next presenter is Ian McCormick. We'll talk about long-term effects of tillage and crop rotations on population dynamics of ammonia oxidizing bacteria and archaea and arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi.
Well, thank you for that introduction, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for attending this. I just have one thing to add on that introduction. When I wrote the abstract, I was interested in arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi, but for the purpose of this talk, we've parted ways at this point. So I'll just be focusing on the ammonia oxidizer, both bacterial and archaeal communities. So why look at the ammonia oxidizers in general? Just as a bit of background, ammonia oxidation is the rate-limiting step of nitrification. And knowing when ammonia oxidation happens is important for both environmental and economical reasons. When the plant needs it, you want ammonia oxidation and nitrification happening so that the plant gets nitrate, which is the most available form of nitrogen in the soil. However, when there's no plant need, obviously, or soil conditions prevent it, you can have losses of nitrogen either through gaseous losses with denitrification or leaching the groundwater. So biotically, ammonia oxidation is controlled by both bacterial and archaeal functional groups, and using quantitative PCR, we can actually target these individual communities by using specific primers, the AMOA gene in ammonia oxidizing bacteria and the CRNAMO gene in ammonia oxidizing archaea. So just generally speaking, I'm just interested, how does tillage and how does crop rotation influence both of these communities? So in order to test this, I worked at a research station that's about 20 kilometers north of my home university, the University of Guelph. And there are some long-term crop rotations that have been maintained since about 1980. And they're organized in a randomized split plot design, with the main plot being crop rotation and the subplot being tillage. And there's numerous crop rotations. However, we had to, due to resource and time constraints, be a bit choosy. And based on existing data, we picked rotations that we thought would be interesting from a microbial ecology point of view. So we chose to look at continuous corn, corn-corn-soy-soy, corn-corn-soy-wheat, and corn-corn-soy-wheat with a red clover cover crop rotation. All of these rotations were either in the first year of corn or, in the case of the continuous corn, in the 30th year of corn. We went out sampling in 2010, and we sampled two of the rotations on the left here to depth, and we would have wanted to sample the other ones to depth, but again, due to time constraints, we just had to settle for just sampling the surface. So essentially what we did is when we took these soil samples, we were able to preserve nucleic acids in the field, so both RNA and DNA, and then through quantitative PCR, we could get a snapshot in time of the community dynamics of the ammonia-oxidizing bacteria and the ammonia-oxidizing archaea. So obviously, looking at tillage, we wanted to go before and after both spring and fall cultivation events. And we also thought that since fertilization has such an effect on soil properties, particularly ammonia oxidizers, we want to get another sampling in there to see how that affects the communities in the different rotations and in the till and no-till plots. So in terms of crop rotation effects, it was very different for both communities. In terms of the AOB, the ammonia oxidizing bacteria, we saw if there was significant differences, it was always the continuous corn having higher active populations or total populations of the AOB. And I'll just draw your attention to the bottom of this table where you see after fall cultivation and corn harvest, we see that active populations of AOB were significantly higher in the surface fraction to depth and in terms of both active and total populations. We see there was a bit of a trend where the corn-soy rotations also had a high activity in the surface soils, but this wasn't corroborated with the activity of these populations. The AOA, the ammonia oxidizing archaea, showed a completely different trend. We didn't see any real tillage effects after tillage events within these rotations, but we did see after fertilization much higher numbers of the AOA, both active populations and total populations in the corn, soy, wheat, red clover rotations. And I'll also draw your attention, there was a till effect within this rotation where no-till plots showed a higher level of total abundance compared to till plots within this rotation. So in terms of tillage effects, tillage didn't really have any effect on the abundance of AOB, but it did have an effect on its activity. So measuring active populations of AOB before and after spring cultivation events, before we see that within till and no-till plots, they follow a similar trend, but after cultivation, there's an inversion of AOB activity in the till plots. And this is, I guess, somewhat expected. In the fall cultivation events, we see the same trend, just even more pronounced. Again, before cultivation, we see a similar trend between till and no-till plots in terms of AOB activity across depths, but after cultivation, we see a homogenization of activity and a drastic decrease in the no-till plots. The AOA, their trends were somewhat difficult, and it's always tricky to compare communities directly, but no matter how we looked at it, the archaeal ammonia oxidizers outnumbered the bacterial ammonia oxidizers, but they both exemplified very different trends. The AOA tended to be lowest in the top 5 centimeters of soil, where the AOB tended to decrease with depth, except, of course, in terms of their activity right after cultivation events. Tillage effects were also somewhat interesting. Again, aside from those trends I showed earlier, there was actually no difference between overall population sizes in till and no-till treatments between the or within the AOB communities, but there was for the AOA, where tillage had a negative effect on both total and active population sizes. So just sort of maybe connecting the dots a bit, in terms of crop yields, the continuous corn rotation had significantly lower yields in 2010 compared to the other rotations, and there was also a tillage effect within the continuous corn and corn-soy rotations where no-till plots had significantly lower yields than till plots. We didn't see this in the other two rotations, and I'll come back to this in a second because that's interesting from what we saw in terms of microbial dynamics. So in summary, tillage affected both communities. It affected them very differently. The AOB tended to respond in a short-term manner with either a homogenization or inversion of activity. The AOE response was less apparent in the short-term, but long-term responses were apparent in the sense that total active populations were lower in till plots, and also it seems that the AOA are more responsive to surface stresses and not as resilient as we saw in the previous graph where the AOA populations were lower in the top 5 centimeters of soil. In terms of the AOB in crop rotation, I thought it was fairly interesting that we saw their levels were significantly higher in the continuous corn plots after corn harvests and applicable till events in the fall, because this also correlated with lower crop yields in the continuous corn plots. And I guess it's a bit of an extrapolation, but I'm wondering if there's some sort of effect on soil fertility here where there's ammonia oxidation and more nitrification occurring at a time when there's clearly no crop need. And could this be affecting subsequent crop yields? The AOA dynamics are a little bit trickier to tie to crop yields. There were obviously effects in the red clover, in the corn, soy, wheat, red clover treatments. We saw higher populations of both active and total abundance of the AOA, but it was particularly higher in the no-till plots, and I guess I'll come to it in a second, but what these results sort of indicate to me is that I didn't really come to any firm conclusions from what I found. I still don't really know what's going on, but I do feel that we have a little bit more focus to go on for future research questions. And touching on what I was saying, I think there's clear evidence to indicate there's something going on in terms of bacterial ammonia oxidizer activity and abundance in the fall, and then subsequent lower yields in those same plots. In terms of the AOA, it's a little bit harder to connect the dots, but we do see higher populations in the corn, soy, wheat, red clover plots, and we saw this particularly in the no-till. Is there any way I can go back the slider to do it? This is one. There we go. If you see here, There was no difference in crop yields between the till and no-till within the corn, soy, wheat, red clover rotations, but there was between the continuous corn. And I'll just remind you that there was a heightened ammonia oxidizing archaeal activity in this at a time right after fertilization when crop need is at its highest for nitrogen. And I wonder if this is offsetting some negative effects of no-till that we see apparent in the continuous corn. So in terms of future work, to work out a bit of the kinks in what I've just described, I think we need to take both steps backwards and steps forward. We need to quantify domain abundances and just see if the bacterial and archaeal populations as a whole are responding similarly to the ammonia oxidizer communities. And we can do that again just by just domain-specific primers and qPCR. Also, I think it'd be interesting to connect the dots possibly with soil denitrifier community dynamics. If you have more nitrate present, obviously there's more substrate for denitrifiers to work with, and denitrifiers tend to work, seem to have heightened activity with freeze-thaw cycles. So if you're going into the winter and you have heightened ammonia oxidizing activity, could this also lead to more soil denitrifier activity in the spring? Of course, you need to take a closer look at just the nutrient levels. The nitrogen for both communities, ammonium and nitrate levels. The carbon, though, is also important. It's been postulated that ammonia-oxidizing archaea can also use carbon as an energy source and aside from ammonia. So that's a bit of some data on that. So that'd be interesting to see if any of the carbon levels correlate with that. And also, just because you have gene copies doesn't mean that the ammonia oxidation is actually happening. So you really need to test soil ammonia oxidation potential and see if one of these, either the archaeal or bacterial communities, is influencing soil ammonia oxidation, or if both of them are influencing it, or if neither of them are, and it's something that qPCR and our methodologies aren't picking up. So I'd just like to thank those who gave me some technical support and words of wisdom and advice, and the Ontario Ministry of Agriculture for funding this study. And, of course, I'd like to thank you for being here and listening.
Do we have any questions?
Yep. It's a urea ammonium nitrate. It's applied yearly. It's consistent on all plots. They do apply potassium and phosphorus based on soil tests.
But it's a solution of urea ammonium nitrate.
Yeah, there is. It's standard agronomic practices for Ontario. So there is a planter nitrogen applied as well. So at corn plant operations, there is a solid, and then at the sixth leaf stage in corn, there's a foliar spray. It's a liquid nitrogen, yeah, that's sprayed in, yeah.
Any other questions? Questions for previous speakers? If not, we'll be on break until 2:30.